really good news. There's no split in the Church of England. We've agreed to love one another. From now on, we're going to listen to one another's views respectfully. And where we do not agree, we're going to just differ gently and let it go. No, I'm just kidding. Of course, we're at each other's throats. As ever, I'm off to General Synod next weekend, and high on the agenda will be the women bishops' debate, how we allow them to come into being without causing schism. But you will know that the big debate is about the appointment of a gay bishop, and there's lots of bishops currently off in Jerusalem plotting to split away from the main Anglican Church. So there's a big debate over homosexuality. But the argument, I suppose, is whether Christians accept homosexuality as being God-given and normal, whether the church should accept clergy being gay and what to do about it. So within the anti-gay bishop debate, there are lots of different sub-debates going on, lots of cultural differences mixed in with the theology. So let's start with the Bible. The Bible does say that homosexual acts are wrong. But then it also says that lots of other things that we currently accept as being right are wrong. For example, a friend pointed out to me that we no longer stone adulterers. We haven't been doing that for quite some time. The basis of the dispute is not what it says in the Bible, but how you choose to read the Bible. Now, you will know that I come from the liberal tradition, and I believe that it is not to be read as a literal document. It's not an instruction manual in the same way that your new computer comes with an instruction manual. For example, apart from the fact that, as I've pointed out just now, there are certain rules that we have decided to ignore or modify because of our cultural attitudes, there are many things in the Bible that were influenced by the fact that it was written at a specific time for a specific culture a long time ago in a very far away place and simply are not relevant to us now. For example, I don't think any of us would now accept slavery as being a natural God-given part of the human condition as it was in that time. So given that it can't be read transparently as just a set of regulations which you follow slavishly, then what do? Well, you apply your God-given intellect to it. You apply your heart, you apply your mind, and you apply tradition and prayer life to it. And that somehow will give us a way to understand the issues that confront us. And every generation has done this. Society and the church have moved on. Not always together. Sometimes society moves way ahead of the church, and the church has to be brought kicking and screaming to catch up. But sometimes it's the church, which is prophetic and actually has a kinder, fairer, more right voice. And the world has to catch up with it. But either way, the church changes and what we believe and how we believe it changes. But that doesn't mean that Jesus changes. And it seems to me that wherever we are in doubt, wherever we don't feel that we understand our way forward, we go back to Jesus, we read his words, and we try and apply his spirit in what confronts us. You will, each of you, have your own views on homosexuality. Partly it might be governed by your age or who you've met in your life. Everything is much more open. I remember my grandmother telling me that she didn't believe that there was such a thing as people who were attracted to those of the same sex until 1914 when she got married. She simply didn't believe it. But of course, there have always been gay people among us. In the Victorian period, hundreds of men were executed, hung by the neck until dead, simply for committing homosexual acts. If you were rich, then you weren't murdered by the state. You were forced to flee abroad, and your possessions were seized by the state. So a huge cultural difference has taken place, hasn't it, between that viewpoint, which pertained in the 1860s, 70s, 80s, 90s, right up to our own time, to the abolition of the anti-homosexual laws, consenting adults in private, which happened in the 1960s. A huge a huge variation, and it's natural and reasonable that many people in our own time would still find it alien and unnerving, and I do not in any way find it wrong that there should be diversity of views on this. I believe that it is normal for some people to be gay. I've got great friends who teach at Bedford Modern, and they said that they could see mostly when children were going to turn out to be gay. They could tell from them being about seven. They were very rarely surprised by people choosing one lifestyle rather than the other. The problem comes when we try and force people to deny what they really are. I have a very good friend who was from the evangelical Christian persuasion earlier in life, and although he had always suspected that there was this aspect of himself that wasn't something that he wanted to be open about, he tried to suppress it and crush it within himself. He even married and had a couple of children, and then later in life, when he realized he could not simply bear to tell a lie about himself anymore, he had to break the marriage apart, and you can imagine how difficult that was for everybody. I do not believe that God ever wants us to live lives that are based on lies, whether it be our sexuality or our politics or anything else. God calls us to be the truest person that we can be according to what we are. The church now has moved to a position where it says, yes, it's normal for some people to be gay, and we want them to feel loved and accepted in the church, unless they are clergy or unless they're bishops. So suddenly across the whole spectrum of the human condition, people who are gay may not have a partner. They may not live openly with somebody they love. And that seems to me a fudge, really, to say that everybody else is allowed to be with somebody they love unless they happen to be a bishop. Why is that being done? Is that just to keep the peace, or is that being truthful to what we really want to believe? Now, I've been reading up on this, and I found a fantastic book called John Boswell, The Marriage of Likeness, Same-Sex Unions in Pre-Modern Europe. So this is about the history of relationships going back into the earliest days of the church. And right from the very beginning, there were actually liturgies, services, in which people of the same sex could promise to love and honour one another, going back to the 4th century after Christ. But times changed, and homosexuality was increasingly seen as being something that was alien to the church, and these liturgies dropped into disuse, and of course they are being revived by certain people in certain churches in London. I don't think it's reasonable to expect the church to marry gay couples, because marriage is between a man and a woman, but does that mean that we should go less far than the state, which allows civil partnerships between people of the same sex? My personal feeling is that God should be part of every relationship, and especially relationships where there is love and trust and commitment. God should be and is present, and we should acknowledge it. We should shore up everything that is beautiful and loving. Now, I don't know how het up you are about the Deceased Sisters Marriage Act. Are you bothered about that? Is that going to make you write to the Archbishop of Canterbury? Well, I assure you that if you had been living in 1907, then you probably would have had the urge to write to your bishop, because it was the big thing in that period. All through the Victorian period, people fell out about whether you might lawfully marry your dead wife's sister. And so on one hand, there were conservatives that said that it was against the law of the Bible, and therefore people who married their dead wife's sister should be cast out. In fact, Holman Hunt, the Victorian Pre-Raphaelite painter, married his dead wife's sister, and they had to be married in Italy, and they had to live abroad, and she was never accepted by Queen Victoria at court. There were, on the other hand, those who were from a more liberal sensibility, and they said we should allow married people to marry those who were connected in that way. And eventually, in 1907, the prohibition in law was removed, but clergy were still allowed to refuse to marry the sisters-in-law and brothers-in-law and stuff like that. I suppose what I'm saying is that what we consider to be the deal-breaker in love and tolerance within the church does change over time. And it is possible that if we could look back, we would see that we are wrong to be so hateful to one another over this issue. There is no excuse, in my view, for witch hunts to take place. Think of Geoffrey John, the Bishop of Reading, or he was appointed Bishop of Reading, and then he had it snatched away from him. Think how he was treated, how he was pilloried, how the hypocrisy of secretly gay bishops turned against him, how other clergy were rude to him. There are still people in this diocese who will not acknowledge his presence in a meeting, although he is a godly man. And it seems to me that God is more offended by our cruelty with our voices than anything that we might do with our bodies. That is just my absolutely basic belief. Think how Jesus turned to the woman taken in adultery with love, how he picked out people that were beneath the contempt of mainstream society. And it seems to me that we have a duty to try and look back at Jesus' teachings and accept that we do not have the right of veto as to who comes into the kingdom and who doesn't. The great commandment to love one another doesn't come with any provisos or amendments. You may not opt out of the great commandment. You must just love one another with no exceptions. I suppose at the moment it seems a bit of a distant debate to us here in the partnership, but one day we might be challenged on these issues, and so I suppose that's why I'm raising it. One day a gay couple might come here and say, would you bless us? What would you wish Charlie to do? Would you wish them to be sent away, or would you wish them to be welcomed here? Perhaps the next minister that God sends along to Putno might be openly gay. How are you going to feel about that? Are you going to, as I understand a local church warden has said, that we must only go for a married bloke because then they won't slip any gays in undercover? If only it was just as simple as that, that would be easy, wouldn't it? I've worked here for a long time now, and I know that many of you are kind enough to accept me and my ministry and even to love me. Would you really love me much less if I lived with somebody called Pauline? I don't think you would. I don't think you'd care. I think you'd care whether I turned up to see you when you were ill in hospital. I think you'd care about the things I did in my ministry. I don't think you'd much care about my sexuality. I suppose I've shared my feelings on this issue because it's the heart of what I believe, and I think that we should try and be honest about what we believe, because at the moment there is in the church a terrible secrecy. Because you can have your orders suspended if you bless gay relationships. If you are openly gay, you can be very harshly treated in some dioceses. Lots of people know that there are lots of gay clergy, but actually when the lights go on and publicity shines on us, we all turn away because we don't want to be the people to stand up and be counted. Now, I know that this is very personal, and some of you will have listened to this and have not agreed with a word of it. And that's fine, and I hope you will forgive me, and I hope that we will agree to differ, because that's what we do in the partnership. We agree to differ, and we accept one another's views. But whatever we believe on the subject, I appeal to you to respond in love to everybody you meet, regardless of whether they represent things that you find it hard to tolerate and understand. We cannot really choose to be what we are, but we can choose to withhold love. We can try to transcend the barriers of human difference, or we can choose that we shelter behind them. Amen.
Thank you, Joan, for speaking about a subject which does require a great deal of healing in our church.